Hello and welcome to Savor. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about IPAs.
IPAs. Which, in case you didn't know, stood for India Pale Ale.
Yes. It's a beer style, and it's a very popular beer style. It's sort of like the beer style of the American craft scene, which is why we wanted to talk about it during this Asheville extravaganza that we are embarked upon.
Did you trademark that?
Not yet.
You better get on it. People are going to want that.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, they're rushing to the patent offices. I think that's how it works.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure.
Well, I was telling Lauren before we started recording that I've always been a person who said I don't like IPAs. But doing the research for this episode, I realized I do like IPAs.
Oh.
But there was kind of this IPA arms race where they were everywhere and bad ones were everywhere.
Yeah, and it was too many.
Yes. So I think I just don't like bad IPAs. But there are some IPAs out there for me. There's one I always get because it reminds me of the day I broke up, which is a weird thing that I do, but it's a good IPA.
That is an interesting bit of nostalgia.
It is, isn't it?
I like it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
We've been researching nostalgia all day. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to follow up with you about this later.
Oh, excellent. Dive into my psyche.
Ooh,
that's
yes.
A dark podcast. All right, moving on from that, let's get to our question, IPAs. What are they?
Well, India Pale Ales are a style of beer made from a light roasted malt and lots of hops, which lets the hops really shine and creates these bright, bitter flavors. But let's get a little bit more granular than that. And that's almost a pun because I'm about to talk about grains. I'm working on it. Okay. Beer. Beer is an alcoholic beverage made from malted grain, water, and yeast. You boil the malt in water to release its sugars, then add the yeast, which eats those sugars and poops carbon dioxide, alcohol, and flavor.
Ooh.
Yeast poop.
Yeast poop again.
Yeah. You can also add other stuff to flavor beer, like hops, to balance those sweet flavors from the malt and the yeast. Most modern beer does contain hops, and hops are the flower of this climbing plant that adds flavors to beer, especially bitter flavors, and a super bonus, inhibits the growth of unwanted microorganisms, especially bacteria, in your beer. They also help stabilize beer's foam. And I really want to do a whole episode on hops now. This is a very pared down version of what it is. But yes, hops can be added to beer right at the beginning of that boil with the malt that's going to extract the maximum amount of acids from the hops and thus the maximum bitterness. Or you can add them towards the end of the boil for more delicate oil-based flavors. Or after the boil entirely when the liquid has cooled for even more of those fresh oil-based flavors. That third one is called dry hopping, by the way, if you've ever seen that phrase and not understood what it meant.
Now you know.
Now you know. Knowing is half the beering. You can also use a combination of these three hop processes, and all will yield slightly different results with different varieties of hops. But in general, hops equal bitter.
Yes. We made a video with a local distillery, that is not right, brewery, called Orpheus, and they let us try straight up hops, and it was quite bitter.
It was, yes.
We have video evidence of it.
Oh, yeah. I think for a good, 20 minutes after I tasted that tiny little granule of hop, I was like a cat trying to, wipe the scent off of my face. It's like, oh, no, what have I done?
Yeah, it was like bitter soap. It was like soap, but even more bitter.
Yeah. I mean, I actually sort of enjoyed the sensation, but that just says something about me, probably. Mm-hmm. Anyway, how bitter are we talking about here?
Yeah, how bitter?
Well, let's talk about IBU, or International Bitterness Units, or bittering units sometimes.
I love those. That is a good way to know what beer you'll like on a menu, I'll tell you that.
It's certainly helpful. It's a scale that's meant to help brewers and drinkers gauge how bitter a beer will taste. You might have seen it listed next to beers on menus or on bottles. We certainly saw this in Asheville. And it's a measurement of sort of one type of bitterness in beer, the parts per million of several bittering compounds that beer contains. And these compounds tend to come in with hops. most beers you will drink range from like 5 to 120 IBUs, with the higher scores indicating higher content of those bittering compounds. IPAs, because of their hop content, tend to veer towards the upper end of that. And interestingly, IBUs, like Scoville units, technically go to infinity.
Oh. Oh, no.
There have been beers measured with over 2,000 IBUs.
Did people survive after drinking them?
I haven't read reports back, but I assume that they, yeah, I've read reviews, so they did live to tell the tale, at least temporarily.
At least for a little bit.
Yeah. Mm. But a lot of other factors in your beer will influence how bitter the beer will actually taste to you. You know, all kinds of things can go into the experience. Like a stout can technically have a higher IBU rating than a pale ale, which
sure.
You would think of, you know, I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, IBUs can give you a good rough idea.
Yeah. And the food also can determine how bitter it is to you, too, if you're enjoying it with food.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good spicy food is good with an IPA, I hear.
Oh, it's lovely.
Okay. Great.
Yeah. Ann Fitt and Glenn talked about that when we were in Asheville.
I really love a super hoppy IPA with spicy Mexican food because, I mean, lagers are great with Mexican food, but you can't taste them once you've got those chilies on your palate, whereas a bitter beer will actually cut the intensity of the chilies, so every bite of chili is, like, that much more intense, which I love.
She's a beer historian, and we had a great conversation with her. But yeah, let's talk about some of those styles of IPAs, because there are a bunch.
There are a bunch. There are more than we included and more than I've ever heard of, honestly. But here's a good rundown of them.
First, we've got traditional IPAs. Those are going to be your English IPAs, made with English yeast, malt, and hops. And they tend to be a little bit more gentle on the bitterness, even perhaps toasty. And stone fruity.
No!
Not in an IPA!
My goodness me. You monster!
They stand in stark contrast to most American IPAs. The West Coast IPA being the original.
The original. These are usually fruitier, citrusier,
floralier, pinier?
Pinier.
Yeah. Usually very bitter and hoppy. Then you've got East Coast IPAs because, of course,
you gotta have some competition.
You do. These are more like English IPAs. They're a little bit more balanced between the sweetness of the malt and the bitterness of the hops, but are not to be confused with
New England IPAs, also called hazy IPAs. And these are a relatively newish style of IPA that are typically a bit juicier and hazier. There was a whole thing where the Brewers Association had to update their IPA guidelines to include juicy and hazy IPAs, since the clear color was a part of the way beer judges would mark a beer, an IPA. This happened in 2018.
Oh, wow.
So very recent.
Breaking news.
The hops associated with these IPAs are Mosaic, Citra, and Galaxy, which are also relatively newish. The yeast used in New England IPAs are different as well. They produce more esters and impart a bit of a sweeter, fruitier taste.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the Double Imperial IPA.
A double or imperial, yes.
Yes, not the Double Imperial, although that kind of does exist.
Yeah, I guess you could do a quadruple IPA if you wanted to.
I think people have.
Goodness.
We didn't include it, but I believe it exists. The Double or Imperial came about as American brewers got more and more heavy-handed with their hops, and we got a new category of IPA.
Then there's, of course, triple IPAs, which are even more hops, even higher ABVs. And I think I've used that a couple of times without explaining it. ABV stands for alcohol by volume.
Yes.
Yes.
There are session IPAs, which are lower ABV, lighter, easier drinking.
Belgian IPAs, which are usually not from Belgium, but they will use Belgian yeast strains after bottling to create carbonation and that kind of Belgian-y sweet flavor.
Mm-hmm.
You've got black IPAs, a.k.a. Cascadian dark ales. These are dry and dark with a kind of chocolate or coffee bitterness, in addition to the usual citrus bitterness, thanks to some roasted malt. You've got white IPAs, red IPAs, brown, rye, oat, lactose, Brett, fruited, sour. Anything that you can do to a beer, you can do to an IPA, and then it creates a new little subcategory. It's sort of like gremlins. It's sort of, they just sort of all just pop off from the main.
What happens if you give a gremlin an IPA after midnight?
I shut out to think.
Someone research that now.
Other terms that you might come across in IPAs are single hopped and fresh hopped. Single hopped is what it says on the box. Just a single variety of hops were used in making that beer instead of a blend. And fresh hopped beers are made using hops that have been picked within the past 24 hours.
Ooh.
So they have like a lot of fresh, bold flavor. And they're usually meant to be consumed right away to get like that just mouthful of grass that you might be looking for.
Sure. One of our first stops when we went to Asheville was at Sierra Nevada's brewery. Their outpost in Asheville.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I can't remember. I know I got one that when I tasted it, it could have all been in my head. But the hops tasted very fresh and like bright and grassy. It was nice.
Yeah. If you're into that sort of thing, it can be quite nice.
If you're not, it can be quite disgusting.
Bracing. Very bracing.
Very bracing indeed. But that did not stop folks from making IPAs. I don't think we can stress enough how much growth IPAs have experienced in the past few decades. In the early 90s, bartenders might not have known what you were talking about when you asked for one. Craft brewing has a lot to do with our increased societal awareness around IPAs mm-hmm. and our increased options.
Oh, yeah. The growth of craft beer and IPAs have gone pretty hand in hand. If you look at the period of 2008 to 2015, the production of craft beer in the United States tripled in volume during that time. IPAs in 2008 were just 8% of the craft market. But sales of craft IPAs rose 39% over the course of 2012 alone, becoming 16% of the market by the end of that year. And then they rose again 50% on top of that over the course of 2014. At the end of 2014, they were 23% of the craft market, and they were not done growing.
Of the U.S. craft beer market, IPAs accounted for 30% of that in 2015. Just up and up and up.
This means that production of IPAs multiplied by more than 10 times in just 7 years, and they are still the biggest category of craft beer in the United States.
We got a lot of IPAs.
We do. But how did this happen?
I don't know. Well, no, I do.
Yeah, well, pretty much. Yes, yes, we've got some history for you. But first, we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
I would wager that a lot of you listeners have probably heard some version of the IPA's history. A lot of you have probably heard some version of the same type of story. But I'm going to be straight with you, listeners. I don't know for sure how much of that is true.
Yeah, it's one of those serious mysteries of history kind of things. But we're going to walk through some of the legends here.
Yeah, uh-huh. And there are certainly some facts where all of this sprang from. Forthwith. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll go over the main stories you're likely to find about the IPA.
But first, a little bit of setup.
Yes.
So, by the mid-1700s, pale ales were all the rage in England thanks to this new heating technology. Prior to that time, wood or peat or charcoal were the fuel sources used to roast malt. And this gave beers a dark color and sort of deep smoky flavors. But back in the 1600s, folks working with coal had derived a new fuel called coke, which burned hotter and faster than anything anyone had seen before. It drove industrial development from iron to steel to glass and also made its way into brewing. Malt could be finished without so much smoke by using coke. The resulting malt was paler and tasted cleaner than malts roasted with wood or whatever. And so the resulting pale ales using these malts were more expensive but very posh and let the flavor of any hops you added shine through more clearly.
Right. But when it comes to India and the British Empire's presence in India, the temperature there was not ideal for beer brewing.
No.
It was too hot. On top of that, the journey took about 6 months from Britain to India, so you had to factor in that travel time to whatever you were planning on surviving that trip in good shape.
Because there were no refrigerators.
Yes. Good reminder. Mm-hmm. When it comes to beer, that means more hops. Hops act as a preservative. A brewer out of 1780s London, George Hodgson, came up with the idea for a heavily hopped beer called October Ale, which normally would have been aged sort of like wine. When it reached India, turns out it had improved with age. Huzzah! Because India was so much hotter than Britain, it eventually was modified to be paler and lighter. Or, depending on what story you hear, the extra hops mask the fact that the beer is rotten. Brewmaster George Shapiro over at C.H. Evans Brewing Company said of the higher alcohol content in this IPA, the October Ale, quote, "It probably kept the people on the other end happy that they were drinking it. You'll get intoxicated much faster and maybe forget you are posted far from home in India." Or it could be because alcohol is a preservative. Could be.
Sure.
Sure. That's one version of the story. Another version is that dark porters, which were popular in London, where the weather was cooler, were the beer that British posted in India were stuck with for a while, and stuck with because porters aren't exactly the best, the drink of choice, we'll say, for hot weather situations.
You think of them more as a cool weather beer, sure.
Yes. And on top of that, they arrived lukewarm, which apparently was not ideal either. Hodgson was the supplier. And he tried all sorts of things to improve the quality of his product and keep his 18-month contract that he had with the East India Company. He sent unfermented beer and would add the yeast once it arrived at its destination. That didn't really work. He sent beer concentrate to be diluted when it arrived. That didn't really work. Then he came up with the idea of sending a pale ale, that October ale, instead. The name comes from the month and time it was brewed. It was invented as a way to lessen the reliance on wine from France.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in case you're feuding with the French.
As England does occasionally.
Occasionally. Because this beer was meant to sub for wine, it was brewed to be very rich and sort of soften in flavor as time passed. There was even a tradition among rich people of having a batch brewed up when their first son was born for him to drink when he turned 18.
I love this idea, by the way.
Yeah?
I'm not sure about babies, but man, if I have any.
You're doing this for sure. So put one in the positive column, one mark in the plus.
I guess I could just make a beer and save it for 18 years, but.
You could. Maybe after 18 years of doing this show.
Oh, heck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Plans for the future.
Yes. These beers were loaded up with fresh hops, up to 10 pounds a barrel. Hodgson took inspiration from this and shipped some of this style of beer to India, and the first batch arrived to that country in January 1822. Folks were so excited about it. Quote, "Hodgson's warranted prime-picked ale of the genuine October brewing, fully equal, if not superior, to any ever before received in the settlement." That's
strong
exciting.
Words.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As other bigger brewers started imitating Hodgson and the beer grew weaker, you know, to save money and all that stuff, pale ale for British consumption went up. But Hodgson's sons, Mark and Frederick, did not mess around. If they got even a whiff that another brewer was looking to make a similar product to theirs, they'd release a ton of their beer and lower their prices to deter any competition. They did away with the middleman, and here the middleman is the East India Company, and they shipped their beer directly to India.
Oh, but I have a feeling that somebody didn't like this, that somebody being the East India Company.
Your feelings are correct, Lauren. In the 1820s, the East India Company's director, Campbell Majora Banks, and I laughed aloud when I read his name the first time, and I just laughed aloud again. Apologies to Mr. Majora Banks. He got his hand on a bottle of Hodgson's October beer and took it to a competitor and asked them to make a replica. The competitor, Allsop, thought the beer was gross. Legend has it he spit it out when he first tried it. But he did set about making it, and he spared no expense. He tasked the guy behind his malts to find the freshest, lightest, and finest hops in all the land, which were then barely kilned. Another legend goes that the brewer tried to test batch in a tea kettle to make sure he didn't waste any of these really expensive hops. And the test was a success. One fellow described the beer as, quote, a heavenly compound with an amber color and a very peculiar fine flavor. But possibly a lot of this isn't true. It is the popular origin story of the IPA. Records do show that at least by the 1760s, brewers were being told that it was, quote, absolutely necessary to put extra hops in beer that were destined for somewhere warmer, like India. Pale ale was being advertised in India by 1784, and about a decade later, you could find advertisements for Hodgson's Pale Ale specifically. Whether or not it had those extra hops, that's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
The first known recipe for an IPA didn't appear until 1821. Quote, it is well known that other things being equal, the liquor keeps in proportion to the quantity of hops. Fresh beer may have from a pound and a half to a barrel of 32 gallons. June beer, 2 pounds and a half. Beer for the month of August, 3 pounds. And for a second summer, 3 and a half. For India voyages, 4 pounds. Hodgson recipe was called, quote, the best and most sought after in India in 1829. 10 years later, and it was described as Hodgson's ale, the universal and favorite beverage of our vast Indian territories. The first written instance of IPA that we know of was an 1835 ad for Hodgson's, quote, East India Pale Ale. Then, in 1869, we get the first written documentation claiming that Hodgson invented the IPA. Quote, the origin of India ale is by common consent accredited to a London brewer named Hodgson. The brewery where pale ale was first brewed, according to popular opinion, was the Old Bow Brewery. Or it could be Bow Brewery.
Oh, I'm not sure. Not sure about a lot of things.
And a lot of historians aren't sure about that popular opinion thing.
Yeah, because there were a couple other breweries that had started making. I think Bass had one kind of early on, and, oh, one other that I'm forgetting the name of. But
yeah,
they were popular in India.
They were.
And they became popular back home as well, supposedly thanks to a shipwreck in 1827. This is another one of those legends that I'm not sure the veracity of, but I'm tickled by it. So a haul of IPA was headed out to India, the story goes, but the ship wrecked in the Irish Sea, and the salvaged cargo was auctioned off in Liverpool. And after that, people got a taste for it, and it was produced widely for home markets as well as overseas.
I hope that's true.
I know, right? That's great.
I remember when we first started this show, we wanted to talk about shipwrecks. I don't know why, but...
Oh, they're great. I think, was it because of champagne?
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow, that was the first one then.
Great champagne stories about shipwrecks.
This is true.
The pressure underwater keeps it in the bottle. Maybe. It's been pulled up from the Titanic.
It has. Perhaps we will one day do our shipwreck episode,
yes.
Finally. But first, we must finish this IPA episode.
Oh, I suppose.
What about IPAs in the U.S. of A? We'll get into that after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so IPAs in the USA. They were being brewed in the U.S. by 1878. Of note is New Jersey's Ballantine Brewery, who were making the same IPA until 1996.
Oof.
Yeah. But we got to talk about refrigeration.
Oh, pretty important.
Yes.
Yes.
Because once it came around, India Pale Ales were sort of viewed as a thing of the past.
We don't need to worry about those anymore.
Right. No need for a beer to survive a journey on a boat unrefrigerated for 6 months. Posh. Poppycock. The popularity of the Czech Pilsner didn't help either. I read in a lot of places that the Pilsner was so popular, it endangered a lot of other beers.
Yeah, all of the research into microorganisms that were happening at the time and all of these clean beers that came out, people had never tasted anything like them because they had never been able to make such a clean beer before. So that they were like, oh, this.
Oh, I want more of this and all the time.
Yeah.
Pale ales still were around, but India pale ales, not so much. The temperance movement, increased ABV taxes, there are a lot of things working against the IPA.
Yeah.
And that didn't change until the 1970s when Americans got into brewing in a big way. First, in 1972, when the Oregon State University's USDA breeding program released the Cascade Hop. That was a, an important step. Craft brewers set about brewing all kinds of old-school European-style beers, the IPA being one of them.
Also, importantly, this was the time when laws came in allowing craft brewing to happen.
Yes, very important. But with more hops and more alcohol, because America, that's what we were doing with IPAs, San Francisco's Anchor Brewing brewed what's seen as the first modern American IPA in 1975 called Liberty Ale. The first awards for IPAs in the U.S. were given out in 1989. The first official double IPA came out in 1994 by the same brewer that released Pliny the Elder 6 years later.
Yes.
The beer is Pliny, the guy is Pliny. Yes. We never know anymore.
I think it's Pliny is the beer and Pliny is the guy.
It's all a mystery.
We did Pliny?
Pliny. We did a video on it. We tried it. Who knows? Anyway, that happened 6 years after the first double IPA came out. Since then, we've seen IBUs of 1,000, apparently 2,000, IPAs with ABVs of 15 to 20%, IPAs with 4% ABVs, sour IPAs, milkshake IPAs. The IPA is a space for brewers to experiment, to push that bitterness envelope, a way to push back against big beer. Although big beer has gotten on the IPA train, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then, in that weird cyclical way that history works, the American-style IPA made its way back to Britain, and now the British are making IPAs again as well.
As of this year, researchers created a genetically modified strain of yeast that can produce the bitter flavors of IPAs without you needing to add any hops to the brew. And, like, speaking of big companies, so what the researchers did, they spliced in genetic code from mint and basil. The yeast eat the sugars in the malt and poop these bitter compounds along with the alcohol and carbon dioxide. And the researchers are thinking that commercial breweries could use yeasts like these to create more consistent product in bulk, because you wouldn't have to worry about the availability and the consistency of hops, which, you know, being a natural product, have natural differences, crop to crop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds a little bit heretical to me. But, you know, I don't know. Science is still cool.
Science is cool.
And as we talked about at the top of the show, IPAs really boomed after the turn of the 21st century. And since then, a lot of digital ink has been shed concerning the popularity of the style. In 2016, one Andy Sparhawk, which is a great name, he was writing for craftbeer.com, and he said that IPAs are like surrealist art. They're very obvious and very bold and can be a good entrance to interesting beers. You know, once you start in on IPAs, you can start looking for more subtle, and by his metaphor, more abstract flavors.
Oh.
Sort of liked that.
Yeah.
And it's a much nicer way than many other people put the American obsession with IPAs.
This is true.
And today, yeah, craft lagers and sours are taking a bite out of IPA sales, but industry experts still think that, like, the next IPA is more IPAs.
Yes. And I know right now, I think the session IPA is really popular, and that's the lower ABV,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it has fruit in it as well, so it's kind of like sour's meat IPA.
Sure.
I do love that it's this field for experimentation and really trying new things, pushing the envelope.
Yeah. I'm glad that more other styles are coming up. I felt like for a good couple years there, yeah, like any brewery that I walked into was 19 IPAs.
Yeah.
And a Pilsner.
Right.
And I was like, I don't want to drink any of these right now.
Yeah, I do love a variety. I think that's ideal.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Doing the research for this one, I made the mistake of reading the comments.
Oh.
And people have some serious thoughts about IPAs. I mean, people have serious thoughts about everything.
Oh, sure.
Woo.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's wonderful that there are many beers and everyone can have opinions about them.
This is true. So we'd love to know if any of you listeners are making IPAs.
Yeah, yeah. If you have any strong opinions about them one way or another, if you have a favorite one that we need to try.
Yes. Oh, always send recommendations away. Always. I got an ongoing list.
Oh, yeah. And this was a very thirsty episode. Like, this was, I was doing most of the research for this early in the morning. And I was still like, man, I could use an IPA right now.
morning beer used to be a tradition, and it still is in some places. And speaking of listeners, this brings us to listener mail.
That was a very cup of grog gesture. Yeah.
I think when you do that motion, that's just the natural voice that follows. And it, no one can see what motion we did, but it was as if we were doing a drinking song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For this first one, Nicole sent us an edible gold poem.
Yes.
Yes. We asked for one and we got one.
It's, y'all are amazing.
You really are. I honestly never thought we would get one. And she sent us a recording of herself saying it too, which we will now play.
Yes.
Built to last. To be passed from one generation, representing a nation for all our descendants. Cast metal, a temple, pendants. Built to last, inert yet imbibing, transcribing the history or unsolved mysteries of a lost love found above in an attic on a Sunday afternoon. Built to be worn, to adorn and to tell a story of a grandmother's holiday when she was 16. Built to preserve, to hold memories, our legacies, a gift for those after me. Unchanging, rare and precious, priceless, built to last, forged in a star exploding, unloading all its energy in hidden ore, discovered in awe, unreacting, pure. Built to connect, spect on circuitry, this is our modernity, 4G. Built to be used, fused into our technology, roots us from A to B and tracks us home safely. Built to connect, to be hidden, barely known and thrown away when our contract ends. Built to be scarce, lusted after, trusted, a stable investment, weighed and stored or worn in extravagance, inert, not designed to imbibe or provide a memory, just a moment of social dominance for supplementing the documented testimonies. Built to consume, assuming you have more money than sense, and no need to commemorate with sentimental purity to propagate with certainty through the times after you. Built to garnish, an ingredient of no nutrients, let's use our humanity to turn nature to our vanity. Ingest mere flakes of priceless, worthless gold. Let your body be told of the millennia of its existence and the decades of advancement built to accelerate the fate of our precious metals.
Also, Amberly wrote, I just wanted to let you know that I recently tried celery juice while on a trip to Ukraine. I found it on the menu at an Italian restaurant and was really intrigued, so I had to try it. I wasn't sure I would like it. I do like celery, though, but it was amazing. They had fresh pressed celery juice, and it was so delicious. It had a really fresh, sweet celery taste. So if you like celery, I would suggest trying it.
Okay. I mean, we were skeptical. I still am a little skeptical, but that's a pretty good review. I'll give it a whirl, I suppose.
Yeah, I would try it. Sure. I'll try anything, really.
We'll try anything, really. But don't put it to the test, please.
Yeah, there's a couple things that are on my maybe not list.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want anyone to try to convince me to taste it.
Wow.
So, yeah. Mm. Thanks to both of them for writing in.
Yes.
If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saberpod.com. But if you email the old address, it will come our way.
It
never
will.
Never fear.
Yes. We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @saverpod.
Yes, without a U.
No U's in saver. I know that that's confusing to all of y'all international listeners. Also, probably the rate at which I say the word y'all, that's got to be a thing.
Yeah, we should do like a little breakdown.
I used to do that. I don't want to know anything about my speaking habits.
I used to do that. I had a bunch of tally marks and like number of curse words per second. It was like a math formula. I kind of loved it, actually.
Oh, now I'm curious. Anyway, okay, yes, we do hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to our amazing super producer, Dylan Fagan. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.